Welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog that I visit every day. I will post a link to that blog below this interview. Mark, as we do every week when I have you on Monday, we look ahead to what news and economic data is out. This week is going to be pretty slow, but we do have some news coming out of central banks. The ECB is meeting, and we get some Fed minutes. What are you going to be watching for both of these events?
Yeah, the ECB is kind of interesting for short-term foreign exchange traders because every meeting, every day that the ECB's met, going back to the beginning of last year, the euro has fallen except once, and that was this past September. So, and why does the euro fall? Because the ECB more often than not is dovish, and there's nothing that says that Draghi is not going to be dovish this week. Some of the German economic numbers, especially factory orders, particularly weak. Here's what it looks like what's happening in Germany. Germany hit by two shocks, or three shocks, I should say. One is its own auto sector, diesel reliance. Second thing is Turkey, big devaluation, a weakness in the Turkish economy, which is a big market for Germany. And then, of course, trade tensions and the slowdown in China. And so there's not much positive economic news coming from the Eurozone. And so I think ECB will be dovish. And I just sort of suspect that the market might have got that priced in pretty much now. We don't have, we probably won't get much more details yet about the targeted long-term refi operations. Those are these multi-year low interest rate loans that the ECB will make. Details will probably be forthcoming, but there's no rush for them. I think the other issue that has risen in the last few days is the idea that if interest rates are going to stay negative for longer in the Eurozone, then maybe something needs to be done to help minimize some of the undesirable collateral damage. And so what some people are talking about is a tiering, so that maybe you reduce the amount of some of the types of funds that are susceptible to the negative deposit rate at the ECB. So not everybody has to have a negative 40 basis points. Maybe some have minus 30, or maybe some have none. And so this tiering system is what people are talking about, but I don't think we'll get much information from that either. So ECB, the important thing is that they're going to be dovish. The market knows about that. And I say that the market, I would suspect, with the euro trading, you know, we were trading back down to the lower end of 112, maybe dipped below it last week. And this is really the lower end that the euro has bid. Seems to me that we're at the upper end here today, Monday, as we speak. But that when we dip, you know, we haven't been able to really rally far. We haven't been able to get above 113 for over a month now, I think. And that on the downside, though, it seems like people come in and buy the euro on dips below 112. So we could go below 112 intraday, but we don't close really below it. And as we turn to the Federal Reserve, you know, there's an important FOMC meeting, and so the minutes will be interesting. And my idea from this is something like this. The Fed gives us two communication tools that they have. One is the FOMC statement, and the other is the dot plots, the forecast that the Fed makes. And Yellen, as well as Powell, have really played out how the market really uses the dot plots. And the Fed doesn't help us sometimes when they talk about the median dot and these kinds of things, and they display the data, that the median doesn't really exist. It's just an average or a median of all these, of everybody else's forecast. It's not the Fed's forecast. And so I would think that when I looked at the Fed statement and I looked at the dot plots, it seemed to me that the dot plots, Fed's forecast, were more dovish than the FOMC statement. And I think that in the minutes, that'll become clearer, that the Fed wasn't as dovish as some people are thinking, that the Fed, like the Fed, would be on the verge of a rate cut, or that that the idea that a couple of the candidates that President Trump has nominated, talking about 50 basis point cut, or the president himself called for a resumption of QE, this is going to show that the Federal Reserve, there's a very large gap between how the Federal Reserve sees the economy and how these people do.
Okay. Well, that will be interesting to see. But again, even when we heard from Powell, he was trying to downplay and even said that they were more optimistic about what was going on in the U.S. I think a lot of that thought plot shift and a lot of that Fed pivot has been on the back of still some of these global fears. But your quick comment there on the ECB and potentially going to some sort of a tiered system of negative yielding bonds, what does that mean for the future, though? That, to me, almost makes it seem like they're just accepting that yields are going to be negative for a long time.
Yeah, no, I think exactly that's exactly what it means. And here's the kind of the challenge they have is Draghi, the current president, his term ends at the sort of so-called early Q4. So you're talking about the forward guidance that the ECB is going to give, which sort of locks the hands, or sort of like limits the options of the next president of the ECB. So I think that's what they've got to be careful of. They don't want to tie their hands too much. Otherwise, like the job, it sort of like takes a lot of the job away, a lot of the importance of the job. It like puts it on sort of the Powell's language, maybe automatic pilot. And you don't want to do that. But at the same time, you want to give a signal to the markets that the first rate hike is going to take a while longer to deliver. The market's now not pricing it in. The earliest sign is late next year. And so that'll be after, say, the next ECB president in office for a year. So it's really a question of like trying to like manage and navigate these conflicting demands. You want to give the market the forward guidance and assurance that rates are going to be low for a long time. And I think that, and to your point, I think that's exactly the challenge, is that the Eurozone economy has slowed down. We're talking about PMIs in Germany below 50, France below 50, Italy below 50. That's some of the measures, that it's service and manufacturing, someplace it's composite, that below 50, and this is with interest rates, negative 40 basis point interest rate. How much can they cut more from here? Now, the German 10-year yield struggling now to hold above zero.
It's pretty brutal the way that we're seeing yields continue to trend, and that's also pulled down U.S. yields. And that's, I think, one reason why that long end in the U.S. continues to remain stuck and still pretty depressed as well. Let's also look ahead to U.S. earnings season. We are just on the cusp of earnings season. A lot of people are predicting kind of a downbeat earnings season. But again, of course, companies always lower their estimates and somehow always manage to beat their estimates, or at least turn out to be a better earnings season than the analysts predict. Where do you stand in this argument? Do you think this earnings season is going to be pretty weak overall?
Yes, I have to just rely on what I read with the earnings data. And of course, we know that the economy has weakened as well. And so it would surprise me to get softer sequentially earnings. Whether it beats expectations or not, of course, this is like a tried and true game on Wall Street of lowering expectations and coming in better. I think what we're going to be mostly interested in, though, is the guidance for Q2. Is it just a soft patch that they're seeing? And how much of this is really international? And you think about international, how much of it's going to be blamed on the strength of the dollar? And so my best guess about this is, though, like I think we see in the stock market, like we see, I think, in Fed policy, people are looking beyond Q1. It's really about what does it mean for the rest of the year? And I think that's how we're going to look at this, the earnings data. So I would look for soft data. When I looked at the stock market, I mean, here we are with the S&P 500, came close to 2,900. We're a percentage point or two away from the record highs. I think it's not just the Fed that took a pivot, but the markets took a pivot, and I think they're pivoting back now. And we would help fuel the stock market gains with ideas that we got low interest rates. We do have low interest rates at the 10-year, like you were mentioning, but on Fed policy, the market is beginning to pare back ideas that the Fed's on the verge of a rate cut.
Yeah, they absolutely are. But I think that's because it also got a little bit overdone in the sense of everyone thinking that the rate cut was coming right away after that pause. And also what's contributing to, I think, everyone needing to slow down their rate cut odds are the fact that, well, the U.S. markets continue to do pretty well and are very close again to all-time highs. But you can make an argument that that market recovery came a little bit too fast, considering we're up about 15% already this year. Let's also talk about the oil market, because oil having another good day today. It's up right around that $64 region. And this is during a typically slow season for the oil and energy market in general. What do you think about that oil sector and its just continued bounce from that low put in at the tail end of last year?
Yes, I'm still bullish on oil, but it's not because of the seasonality and things like that. It's not even coming from the demand side. This is where sort of an interesting thing that's happened, right? That this world economic slowdown, and you got the, and somehow you would think that that would be negative for oil prices. And here's what strikes me, though, is that the Atlanta Fed began this quarter thinking that the U.S. economy was only growing, say, less than 0.5% at an annualized pace. And now it's above 2%, or say it was above 2% before the U.S. jobs data at the end of last week. So that would suggest at least, and we got some better data from China, so all suggest that the demand side should be up. But the reason that oil prices, I think, have rallied, I expect them to continue to rally, has all to do about supply and about politics or geopolitics. A couple of hot spots now. We're all familiar with what's going on in Venezuela, and it's going to heat up because President Trump has basically ordered Russia to pull their troops out. And this is going to be not quite a Bay of Pigs story, because remember what happened in the Cuban Missile Crisis, was the reason that these Soviet ships turned back, what may not have been that they were so intimidated by U.S. naval presence, but that the U.S. offered a quid pro quo. U.S. took missiles, promise to take missiles out of Turkey on the Russian border. And so I don't know if Trump has been offering a quid pro quo for Russia to stop aiding the Maduro government. But Venezuela is one disruption of supply. Second disruption of supply happening in Libya. And you see this is on the front page of the news today, really, is that the opposition militia is making an assault. And this is threatening Libyan oil. And Libyan oil is 1.1 million barrels a day. And so people are pricing that this might get worse in Libya. Third problem, third challenge, is the embargo against Iran. The waivers that the U.S. granted are going to be coming off at the end of this month, early next month. And it's not clear what the U.S. what's going to be decided. My best guess is that there were some countries that didn't, even though they had the waiver, they didn't buy any Iranian oil. So I say we could take back those waivers without much of a cost, without really impacting supply or demand for, you know. But for some of the larger countries, I think that like China, for example, I think that the U.S. is going to just renew that. It might be easier to try and enforce it the other way. But you've got these disruptive politics. Interestingly, today the U.S. Formally listed the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist organization. This is a very this is seen to be an aggressive act by the Iranians. Of course, part of them have already been ruled a terrorist organization, and the Iranians threaten to retaliate as well. And the other kind of interesting geopolitical thing happening in the oil market, I think, is there's this bill that's been debated about in the U.S. Congress since 2000 or so, which is basically to apply, basically how it works is this. OPEC countries have a waiver of antitrust. That is, they can operate even though they would violate U.S. antitrust laws. Congress has been debating about taking that away from them. That is, applying U.S. antitrust laws to OPEC, which would be a very disruptive, or potentially very disruptive. The Saudis apparently have raised their, decibel, I suppose, of their opposition, and have threatened to begin accepting, if that the U.S. would pass it, that they would begin accepting other currencies for the oil besides U.S. dollars.
I've heard that as well, but what you have also outlined is just a whole lot of geopolitical risks that are present for the oil sector, and which is definitely helping support the oil price moving higher. Where do you think the oil price could go, though? Could we be soon bouncing or moving higher by another just over $10, testing those recent highs back in October of $76, almost $77 on crude?
You know, I think today's an important day because they're getting above that Fibonacci retracement that the technicians might look for from the fourth quarter's decline. That came in around 63.45. I've been charting this, mapping out this head and shoulders pattern from the end of last year, early this year, and that projects to me up to 67. And when I see these kind of moves, you know, the 67 would be the minimum. Measuring objective from the head and shoulders. And so, say 70, 75, that all seems reasonable to me, especially if there's more disruption. If Maduro stays in Venezuela longer, I mean, Assad is still in Syria. And so just because the U.S. doesn't like someone doesn't mean that they always it doesn't mean we always get what we want, so to speak. And I think that that's what happens with the waivers. And the Saudis are saying that they're not going to make a decision about extending the output cuts until they see what the U.S. does. Well, they don't say what they see what the U.S. does. They say they'll have to wait till May, which is after the U.S. decision about the waivers. So, yeah, I think it's going to stay a geopolitical market. And and I think that we should be prepared for more comments from Trump warning about sort of pressing OPEC to produce more oil.
All right, Mark, we're going to wrap it up there, but some interesting comments on what's going on in the oil market, but then also diving down into what we can see from the ECB. Remember what Mark said, too? We usually see the euro pull back after these meetings, and there's really no reason to expect the ECB to come out more hawkish after this meeting, so that could provide that another bounce to the U.S. dollar, plus earnings season right around the corner. I know a lot of people are watching that, and the fact that oil is moving higher during a typically slow type of season for it. It's some markets are still moving, but still so much is dependent on trade issues and some of these geopolitical issues that continue to have some worrisome signs. Mark, it's always great chatting with you. Thanks for taking some time. And everyone, go click that link below and visit Mark's website. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.